everybody, and welcome to episode 15 of the ZU Cast. I'm Amanda Van Heil. I'm going to be hosting today, and I'm joined by Peyton. Peyton, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do at Zelda Universe?
Salutations, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Peyton Garrett, and I go by Emperor P on the internet. At Zelda Universe, I run my own little show called Creators of Hyrule, and keep your eyes open a little for that, because there's some more episodes of those starting to get in the spiral. Self-plug for ZU. And I also do some Twitch stuff. I am one of our Tuesday night Twitch streamers, so you can find me there. And yeah, let's get this going.
Okay, so the first one is going to be Zelda History Part 1, and this is going to be going from 1986 through 1990, and Shona is going to be talking about that one. And what's the next one?
After that, we have Peace of Heart, the music of Zelda 1 and 2, with a brand new Zelda host, Connor Schultz, who has been on a few Zelda streams before, but I think this might be his first time on the YouTube channel, so it'll be fun to see him around.
Yeah, it'll be great to have him back. And then we've got the Opinion Corner, which is the Zelda timeline. This is with the Zelda Anne and Realm. All sorts of opinions on the Zelda timeline. I can't wait for us to share ours.
Ah, the timeline. What a wonderful thing.
And then finally, credits and bloopers, assuming that we mess up. Peyton, you and I would never mess up, would we?
Listen, we are clearly on ZU staff, the most on-topic, focused, goal-oriented people.
Yeah, we're number one.
And with that, let's go ahead and get right into Zelda History with Shona. Shona, take it away.
Hi, Zelda fans. It's time to get your TARDIS, DeLorean, or other preferred time machine of choice ready, because we're taking a trip back in time. Our destination? The year 1986. My name is Shona, and I'll be your tour guide as we explore the years 1986 to 1990 in Zelda history. The first Legend of Zelda game was released in Japan on February 21, 1986, but it was in development for at least a couple of years prior. It was developed alongside Super Mario Bros., and the two games were designed to be quite different. Where Mario was a linear action platforming game, Zelda was designed to be the opposite. Before the game was given its title of The Legend of Zelda, it had the working title Adventure. The game's creator, Shigeru Miyamoto, wanted to recreate his childhood experiences of exploring the land around his home without a map, and the sense of wonder that he felt as he discovered caves, forests, and lakes along the way. In the game, players need to explore and make use of in-game hints in order to progress, and the game was bundled with a partial map and strategy guide to help them get started. Princess Zelda was named after the wife of F. Scott Fitzgerald, the author of The Great Gatsby. Miyamoto simply heard the name and liked it. Link was named because he is the player's Link into the game. He was intended to be someone that the player could identify with, starting out as an ordinary boy and growing stronger during his journey. The game was a huge success, receiving rave reviews and going on to become a bestseller. Its open world and non-linear style of gameplay is what really set it apart. It not only launched the entire Zelda franchise that we know today, but laid the foundations for many other adventure and role-playing games. To this day, it's considered to be one of the most influential games of all time. Less than a year after the first game was released, a sequel came out. Zelda 2: The Adventure of Link was released in Japan on January 14, 1987. The gameplay was quite different to the original, with the majority of action taking place with a side-scrolling perspective. It also introduced an experience system, magic, and more complex combat. Today, Zelda 2 is widely considered to be the black sheep of the Zelda series because it's so different to most of the other games. But you have to remember that in 1987, there was no Zelda formula, and the decision to make Zelda 2 quite different from the first game was deliberate. Zelda 2 was received very well and also became a bestseller. It introduced several elements that would go on to become mainstays of the Zelda franchise. The biggest of these is the Triforce of Courage. Zelda 1 only had two Triforces, Power and Wisdom. Zelda 2 also introduced the magic meter, towns full of NPCs that Link could visit, and the idea of doing small missions or side quests for these NPCs. It was also the first game to feature the Shadow Link character. So, by mid-1987, Japan had two Zelda games while the rest of the world had none. That changed in August, when the first game was released in North America. Europe had to wait a little longer, but finally received the game in November, almost 2 years after it was first released in Japan. 1988 didn't see a brand new Zelda game, but it's when the rest of the world outside of Japan received Zelda 2, though it wasn't released until quite late in the year. But by this time, Nintendo fever had already taken off and hit the world. The NES had been a huge success, and two of the most popular franchises were Zelda and Mario. Tons of Zelda and Mario merchandise was released this year. Fans in 1988 could decorate their bedrooms with a Mario and Zelda theme, with everything from comforters to curtains to trash cans available. There was also the Nintendo cereal system, which had two different types of breakfast cereal in the one box. A fruity-flavoured Super Mario Bros. Themed cereal, and a berry-flavoured Legend of Zelda cereal. Also this year, Milton Bradley released some jigsaw puzzles and a board game. The flood of merchandise continued into 1989. While I'm sure that most Zelda fans would have been really eager to get their hands on it, some of it was a little more questionable, like this really weird Link Halloween costume that was released. It came with a Link mask, which, while it looked a little creepy, wasn't too bad. But instead of the classic green tunic, it had a pair of red pants and a top with a picture of Link fighting a Lionel on it. I'm not entirely sure why Link would wear a top with a picture of himself on it, but sure. Contrary to what you might think, Link's Awakening was not the first portable Zelda game. 1989 saw the release of Zelda games for both Game & Watch and Game Watch. The Game & Watch was a handheld device made by Nintendo that somewhat resembled the Nintendo DS with its two LCD screens. Each Game & Watch had an inbuilt game, along with a clock and alarm function. These devices were a precursor to the original Game Boy and proved to be extremely popular. The Zelda version required Link to battle 8 dragons in order to collect 8 Triforce pieces. The story behind the game is that the dragons have captured Princess Zelda, and the only thing that can break the seal to her prison is the complete Triforce. The gameplay has Link fighting through a dungeon on the lower screen of the console, and once he reaches the boss, he climbs a set of stairs and then the action switches to the upper screen where Link must fight the dragon. Last year, for the 35th anniversary of Super Mario, Nintendo released a special Super Mario Game & Watch, so I'm really keen to see if they will release a Zelda one this year. The Game Watch was an actual wristwatch with a built-in game. The Legend of Zelda pits Link against a family of Aquamantis dragons. Link must make his way through 4 dungeons, each with 4 rooms. At the end of each dungeon, Link fights a dragon in order to collect a piece of the Triforce. In this game, the Triforce has only been split into 4 pieces, and once all 4 pieces have been reunited, the game is complete. Now, we can't leave the year 1989 without mentioning the infamous animated series. The popularity of both Mario and Zelda was such at the time that they were brought to life on TV with the Super Mario Bros. Super Show. It aired on weeknights and featured live-action segments alongside a Mario cartoon, but every Friday they would play a Zelda cartoon instead. In the cartoon series, Link lives in the castle where he guards the Triforce of Wisdom, while Ganon has the Triforce of Power. Whoever can get their hands on both Triforces will rule Hyrule forever. Therefore, most of the episodes revolve around Ganon plotting to steal the Triforce of Wisdom. A recurring gag is that at some point in most episodes, Link tries to get Zelda to kiss him, and, in the same way that Ganon's plans to steal the Triforce are always thwarted at the last minute, Link attempts at receiving a kiss never quite succeed. I also can't talk about recurring themes in this cartoon without mentioning a certain catchphrase often uttered by Link while in the presence of Zelda.
Well, excuse me, princess.
If you're wondering how often Link said this, it was a total of 29 times in 13 episodes, and it now lives on as a meme in the Zelda community. The Super Mario Bros. Super Show was cancelled late in 1989, which spelled the end for the Zelda animated series. If you want to hear more about the animated series, check out our ZUcast episode from November 2019 when we celebrated its 30th anniversary. For fans who were disappointed that the Zelda animated series ended its original run in 89, 1990 brought more Nintendo cartoons, including a few that featured Link and Zelda. Captain N, the Game Master, was an American cartoon series about a boy named Kevin who, along with his dog, was sucked into his TV and into a world called Videoland, where popular Nintendo franchises were brought to life. Using an NES zapper, controller, and other Nintendo merchandise, Kevin and Videoland's Princess Lana went on many adventures, thwarting the plots of villains from a large variety of games, but most often Mother Brain from Metroid. On four different occasions, Kevin and Lana teamed up with Link and Princess Zelda, who had grown up a little since the 1989 series. 1990 also saw Valiant Comics begin releasing the Nintendo Comics System, including comics based on The Legend of Zelda. These were set after the first two Zelda games and took some inspiration from the animated series, but feature more serious storylines and deeper characterization, of the main characters at least. Only five issues were released, but they are surprisingly entertaining. With 35 years of Zelda history to cover, we're not going to do that all today. Join me next time as we explore the next 5 years, 1991 through 1995. Do you have fond memories of the old school NES Zelda days? What was your favourite thing to come out of this era? For me, it's hard to go past the original game. Without it, we wouldn't be here today. I'd love to hear your thoughts and memories, so please feel free to leave a comment. Until next time, farewell.
So, fun fact, The Legend of Zelda turned 35 this year, but you want to know what else turned 35 this year? Me.
Huh.
As in 2 weeks before Zelda, like 2 weeks to the day after my birthday, Zelda turns 35, or turned 35.
Heh. Imagine having a 2 or a 3 in your age.
Yeah, uh-huh. What, you got like, what, 10 years until you turn 20?
2. Calm ten. Down. Calm down. Is this just going to become the podcast thing? Cody calls me 12, you call me 10.
Yeah, I mean, I usually call you 12. Or the 6. Oh. I think I call you the 16-year-old. Yeah, so in my head, you're 16. Like, forever.
What Zelda games were you playing when you were 16? What was the big game around that time in your life?
Okay, so when I was 16, Wind Waker came out when I was 16. But I didn't get it until, like, I was 17. I think it just happened that way. What's so funny?
That was the year I was born.
Oh my gosh. But, so was that 2002 or 2003 that you were born?
2002.
Yeah, that's when I was 16, and that's when Wind Waker came out, and I remember reading about it in Nintendo Power, but I didn't get it yet, and then I got it, like, you know, the next year, and absolutely loved it. I just sat in my room for like 2 weeks straight. I was homeschooled, so I could have done that easily. So I just sat in my room for 2 weeks straight and just did nothing but play Wind Waker. So I did like school crap, and then I'd play Wind Waker, and then I'd have like my piano lessons. My teacher would be like, "Why haven't you practiced this week?" I'm like, "Because I got a new Zelda game." And that was my answer. Yeah.
That checks out.
That is like the most Amanda thing to ever do.
No, yeah, that's definitely Amanda. Yeah. What was I doing when I was 16? What? Okay, when was I 16? Is the better.
So you were 16 in 2018.
2018. So I was playing Breath of the Wild.
Oh, gosh.
That doesn't seem right. Breath of the Wild.
So Link's Awakening came out in 2018. So did Cadence of Hyrule come out in 2018? I cannot remember. I can't get this all straight.
I don't remember. Cadence of Hyrule.
I feel like Cadence of Hyrule came out around the same time as Link's Awakening, just like a few months beforehand.
Cadence of Hyrule, I thought, was mid 2019. Yeah, that was right before
Link's Awakening, Ben.
Interesting. Wow. It's interesting seeing the Link's Awakening remake, because that game has been remade twice now.
Yeah.
Like, they really like it.
Well, I mean, it's a fun game. It's really good. I finally beat it the other day.
I mean, but they won't remake Digging Simulator, and it makes me sad.
Well, I think they should remake Link's Crossbow Training now that they've got the new Joy-Cons, and they're going to be doing that with the next Zelda Breath of... Or the next... What game is it? Not Breath of the Wild. Skyward Sword. They're doing the Skyward Sword thing with the Joy-Cons like it's a crossbow or bow and arrow.
Listen, I'm just saying, I played Link's Crossbow Training on stream a week ago about, and that game still slaps.
I've never played it. I've never played Link's Crossbow Training.
Wait, you didn't participate in the tournament we did at Z-Youthon? The Crossbow Training tournament?
I don't even know when that happened.
Oh, right. I think you were asleep. You and Josh were both asleep.
I was either asleep or at Kung Fu, one or the other.
Wow. Yeah, and Jake absolutely body slammed us. I guess it was 2 years ago. This was Z-Thon, I guess, 2 years ago, because this is when people were actually there. So I think it's time we move on to our next host and the new segment host himself. Let's head on to Piece of Heart, the music of Zelda 1 and 2 with Connor Schultz. Take it away, Connor.
As far back as I can remember, my family always had a game console. I don't know when they bought it, whether it was for my older brother, for the both of us, or just something to distract the kids when the adults wanted some quiet time. But it was there, partnered with the only television we had in the house. I will automatically be dating myself when I say that this console wasn't some form of PlayStation or an N64, but a dull gray rectangular box with a front-facing lid and buttons. Its red letters prominently displaying Nintendo Entertainment System. Along with that NES was a full set of games, including several popular titles. Tecmo Super Bowl, Mega Man, Super Mario Brothers, to name a few. But forefront in my mind are two unique games that were encased not in the same grays as the system, but in sparkling gold. Their titles, The Legend of Zelda and Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. My attempts at both of these games were pitiful, to put it mildly. NES games were not designed for the faint of heart or low of skill. And as my 5-, 6-, and 7-year-old self was painfully aware, I was both of those things. And I was punished severely for it. I still remember the frustration and the tears as I flailed helplessly against a wall that would not budge. So why did I continue? And how did these constant failures lead to a lifelong dedication to this series? My name is Connor Schultz, and this is Piece of Heart. Games for the NES were not designed to be easy. The incredibly small amount of data able to be contained in a game cartridge, a data size measured in mere kilobytes, meant that all of it needed to be focused on gameplay. Only the barest explanation of plot and game mechanics existed in-game, most of it being relegated to a small pamphlet that accompanied the cartridge. But even with every bit dedicated to gameplay, 100 kilobytes isn't enough to make anything particularly long or complex. The only way to make a game last long enough to be worthwhile was to ramp up the difficulty, sometimes to ridiculous proportions. That's all well and good for a seasoned, hardcore gamer, But to a young boy barely starting elementary school, it meant that I was lucky to beat or even locate the first dungeon before meeting a harsh and unforgiving death. For days and attempts beyond count, I walked the all too familiar paths and halls, trying to scrape together just enough luck to survive until the next room. That luck never lasted long, and the images of the game over screen are permanently etched into my brain. The funny thing is that back then, like so many children, I wasn't exactly known for continually trying something. Frustration, defeat, and most likely boredom had me moving quickly from one game or toy to the next. My parents would insist that I needed to learn how to stick with something until the end. But for most efforts, that kind of determination and drive wouldn't become part of my system for several more years. So, what kept me coming back to what was undoubtedly certain failure? The moment you turn on the game, the title and theme of the original Zelda convey an immediate sense of epic adventure. That haunting theme, reminiscent of an organ, delivers an impression of drama and awe. Immediately, you know that this will be an adventure unlike any other. As soon as the game begins, you're left with a level of freedom that we would not see again for 30 years, accompanied by an overworld theme that transmits that adventurous feeling everywhere you go. And while finding the princess is a Herculean task, finding secrets is an almost constant joy. Even when I was struggling against enemies or simply running for my life, there was always something new to discover in the next area. A cave, a shop, maybe even a secret reward. No matter how many times I got lost, there was always something new to discover, even if I had discovered it once before. Years later, when I finally had the skill and patience to explore those areas thoroughly, that atmosphere of excitement was only heightened by the thrill of discovery and success. The adventure of Link opens with an almost reverent melody, a tune that belies the difficult journey that awaits you. Meanwhile, its overworld music conveys that feeling of adventure in passionate tones. In a way, it almost does it even better than Zelda's original theme. The opening measures, filled with anticipation and determination, opens to a fanfare, driving you onward towards your destiny. Then the caves, the palaces, and even the random battles transmit intense focus and conflict in a way that is perfectly fitting for the quest you have set out on. The music never got old, and despite the quick and near constant deaths I found myself in, I always felt like I was embarking on something grand, an epic adventure that I would finally conquer over a decade later. As a kid, I spent a lot of time running around trees, hills, my backyard, even nearby construction sites, pretending I was somewhere doing something amazing in a land far away. While the settings would change, there was always that constant atmosphere of adventure. Whether I was defeating a great monster, rescuing a princess, or simply discovering something new, my inspiration for those grand adventures often boiled down to the images I had of Hyrule and what it must feel like to take those adventures to their dramatic end. Those two games are still with me, their golden luster never fading. As the years passed, and more titles bearing the name Legend of Zelda came into being, it is amazing to me to see how all of these games not only tie into these first two titles, but how they have carried over the spirit and the atmosphere these games established, The characters, the goals, and even the locations may change from one game to the next. But the feeling of adventure and wonder never seems to leave. An urging to not just take up the sword and charge into battle, but to explore, discover, and learn just what happens when you encounter the unexpected. A sense of adventure that will always lay in a piece of my heart.
Thanks, Connor. So, to me, the only redeeming quality of Zelda 2 is the soundtrack. Have you played it?
I have played parts of Zelda 2. I did not think the music was that memorable. I like the temple theme, though.
Yeah, that song. That song, like, is the one that redeems it, because yeah, it's awesome.
And then, other than the main theme of Zelda 1, like, which is obviously, like, the Legend of Zelda theme, how can you not love it? I don't think Zelda 1's really that good. It's got, like, 3 songs, I think.
Yeah, it's just that one, and then there's, like, the Labyrinth theme, and then something else. I don't know. I'm playing it right now, actually. Well, not this right this moment as I'm speaking, but have been playing it in the past like week or so.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear them talk about the music, because it's just, I don't ever think it's really that memorable personally, the music in Zelda 1 and Zelda 2.
Well, the main theme is pretty memorable. That was played at my wedding, actually.
Really?
Yeah, so not the processional. The processional was actually the theme to Jurassic Park, because I love that song. So that's what I walked down the aisle to, was Jurassic Park. And then,
oh my gosh,
walking down the aisle, like, as like we were leaving, was the Zelda theme.
Man, that's one of my goals. I just want to play Malomart, be the only song at my wedding.
Oh my gosh.
Just Malomart on loop.
Oh my gosh.
What's wrong with Malomart?
There is absolutely nothing wrong with Malomart. You'll go listen to all the Malomart you want.
No. What is your issue with Malomart?
I don't have an issue with it. It's just there's only so long I can take that song.
Okay, that's fair. I'll have to squeeze in some other songs. Maybe Ilya's theme. I don't know. Just mix and match things.
That's my thoughts on anything. And yeah, anything involving Ilya, just bleh. So since I just brought up my opinion, which is actually fact, let's go over to the opinion corner with the Zelda timeline from the Zelda Anne and Realm.
Well, everyone, welcome to Opinion Corner. This is a very new kind of segment that we're bringing into the podcast. It is going to be with me, the Zelda Anne, as well as Realm Wings.
Hi, everyone.
So, Realm Wings, we ended up deciding for our Opinion Corner to pretty much talk about the timeline. And we had a couple of things that we were going to talk about, like, for instance, how the timeline doesn't work, and how possibly we could fit in Hyrule Warriors and Breath of the Wild. So I guess we can start off with, well, the first one. How does the timeline not work? What's your opinions about it?
That's a very interesting question. And I think that, like, in the grand scheme of things, if you're connecting a bunch of games that, you know, really don't always make a lot of sense to be put together anyway as a cohesive thing, wherein, like, all of them literally took place, I would say that the timeline that exists is a fairly good solution. And like, a lot of people over the years have tried to use, like, splits in the timeline or, like, multiple different timelines to kind of reconcile a lot of the things. I would say that the one that makes the least sense to me, and this isn't so much necessarily a continuity thing, but is the child timeline of the split, has always kind of felt like the junk drawer timeline to me. That is, like, That's kind of where all of the games they don't really know where to place go. And Majora's Mask leading into Twilight Princess leading into Four Swords Adventures has always felt, I don't know, it's always felt a little bit weird in that there doesn't seem to be very many satisfying conclusions there, as opposed to, like, the Wind Waker into Phantom Hourglass into Spirit Tracks. Obviously, those are all sequels to each other, but that feels cohesive in a way the Child timeline doesn't.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. Actually, the thing is that's kind of interesting when you mentioned dealing with the Child timeline. I ended up doing a little bit of research dealing with, well, pretty much what people ended up thinking of how the timeline would work throughout, well, throughout time. Pretty much, yeah, Ocarina of Time definitely ended up kind of splitting things up through different kinds of timelines. But everything was doing okay for the timeline. Like, we went to Ocarina of Time, and then we went to Majora's Mask. And then Wind Waker, yeah, it ended up doing that one little split, but everybody was okay, because we were just like, okay, we can see a Child timeline with Link to the Past. And then we've got an adult timeline for Wind Waker, because it kind of makes sense, because Zelda ended up sending Link to the Past, which caused the adult timeline. It's like, okay, that's good, that's good. The thing that ended up messing people up is when Twilight Princess came out. And it just really started messing things up, and people were like, okay, Twilight Princess doesn't quite fit after Wind Waker, and it doesn't quite fit after Link to the Past, and you can't really flip-flop Link to the Past with Twilight Princess, so it was really confusing a bunch of people. So they ended up kind of, well, Nintendo ended up deciding, oh, we're just gonna have a random timeline of the hero is defeated, and that's where people were just like, oh, what? That doesn't make sense. So, yeah, totally. I kind of feel like, yeah, the Child timeline, it made sense with when Link to the Past was there, and the adult timeline definitely makes sense with the Wind Waker, but Twilight Princess was the one that just kind of screwed things up a bit, even though that's an amazing game, but it kind of messed up with the timeline majorly.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love Twilight Princess, and, you know, I don't know, it's difficult. I wouldn't even necessarily say that Twilight Princess couldn't fit into the downfall timeline necessarily, but it does mess with a lot of stuff. It is interesting that you bring up that the timeline split has been a thing that people have thought for a long time, even before Nintendo actually made it official. Because I feel like a lot of new fans don't realize that had kind of been a thing in theorizing for a long time before Hyrule Historia came out. And Ocarina of Time, actually, in those old theories, is pretty much always listed first, which is correct, actually, for the most part, because a lot of those were prior to the Minish Cap or Skyward Sword releasing. And I mean, it makes sense that kind of all of these branches would branch off, so to speak, of Ocarina of Time, because for the series, that's really, like, the anchor point of all of the lore and themes and recurring locations and characters. Like, it is really significant how much of a role Ocarina of Time played in defining how the series would look going forward, so it kind of makes sense that would be the origin of the timeline for so many people. And even, like, the chronology of the Downfall timeline and Wind Waker being their own things was pretty consistent at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing that I personally, kind of going down the whole route of getting that one split with the hero being defeated, I feel like Nintendo could have done a little bit better with explaining that. I actually ended up getting a little bit of research from, well, they're called Geekerly Collective, and you can actually look it up on YouTube, where they end up explaining how the hero defeated timeline should be recorrected to where it's actually the hero disappearing from the spirit temple. Because basically, in Ocarina of Time, you got... Okay, so you end up getting the Master Sword, and you end up doing that little time skip for 7 years, and you end up waking up 7 years, and then you go off to the different temples until you end up... Well, technically, you can go back in time at the Shadow Temple, but you technically can still do the Shadow Temple without the Lens of Truth, so it's not really required to go in back in time around that time. But the Spirit Temple, you need to go back in time because Adult Link needs to visit the Sage to be able to open up that time so you can actually have the spirit of the Sage there. And also so that Link, as in a child, can actually go through the temple. So when Link ended up doing that, he ended up splitting the timeline at that point, which where all the sages were supposed to be awakened, one was missing, which was the Spirit Temple Sage. And so during that time, the hero disappeared, the sages weren't awakened, so Ganondorf ended up wreaking havoc, ended up destroying everything, and that's where the hero, quote-unquote, defeated timeline ends up happening. So hero wasn't defeated, he just flat out disappeared. Almost like he just went bye-bye, he went gone. And I actually like that better than just, oh, the hero died.
I agree. I really like that theory, especially because it fixes a problem I think a lot of people see with the hero is defeated, which is that for the other two timelines, it's established that, like, somebody's action within the plot of the games made that split happen, that either sending Link back to the past or him remaining an adult, that was an active, like, distortion in time that happened that split those two timelines. And so, you know, there's a very clear reason that occurred. With the hero's defeated timeline, though, I feel like a lot of people wonder, like, okay, well, if that can happen, then is there a hero is defeated timeline split for every single game? Because it kind of opens up the idea that within the games, timeline splits and alternate universes can happen just based off of someone's actions. And so that, like, for any, like, action or event that happens, there could be an alternate universe in which that doesn't happen, which is fine, but I think complicates things to a degree that isn't necessary, especially when with the media you already have, there's a little bit more significance placed on how and why those splits happen. Because within Ocarina, you know, both timelines, we actually see those. Like, they are things that actually happened. Whereas with the heroes defeated, it's a little bit vague how that exactly goes down. And it also, again, the significance of that particular moment of defeat.
Absolutely. And also kind of what you ended up saying with the hero being defeated, how does that even work too? Because it would have to be a multiverse or a multi-world to even have it work, mm-hmm. because the hero died. He's dead.
it makes it weirder to then present it as, like, flowing directly from Ocarina of Time in the same way that the adult and child timelines do. Because it's not really the same thing in that, like, an event that happens in that game does not directly kick off that. And so, like, the adult and child timelines can technically kind of coexist. They can be happening simultaneously, in a sense. But the hero's defeated timeline is mutually exclusive with both of those two. It can't exist at the same time. And so, and again, like, it's fine, but presenting it as a split in the same way that the adult and child timelines are is weird and confusing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the biggest reasons why people are so confused with the timeline. They can understand the whole child era, adult era kind of thing, but it's just the hero's defeated is so confusing. I've had multiple people come up to me, and I've actually had this happen during a stream that I was streaming on Zelda Universe, where someone was like, okay, I get the child, I get the adult. Where in the world did the hero defeated come from?
I don't know. And that kind of, it wraps back to my whole gripe with the child timeline, in that thematically and plot-wise, like, with a little bit of stretching, I don't think there's necessarily anything about those games that makes them impossible to fit within another timeline. Like, Twilight Princess, I think, with a little bit of working, I think could fit within the old child timeline, which is now the downfall timeline, or the hero's defeated timeline. And Four Swords Adventures is a little bit less clear to me, but, you know, I don't know. I just don't know if there's anything that necessitates it. And in fact, I've thought, and I, you know, I'm not like an expert theorist, so someone can definitely correct me if I'm missing something here, but I feel like, no, never mind.
The timeline is confusing. It really is. And actually, while you bring that up with Twilight Princess, there's another game that I believe doesn't quite fit where it's supposed to, and it's Zelda 2. Because of one big reason. The name of the princess. The name of the princess is actually Princess Zelda 1. And she's pretty much the top Zelda that ended up creating, well, the name that Zelda ends up going by today. She is the first, and it even says in the Historia that she was the one where all the rest of the Zeldas ended up getting the name from. So if that is true, where is Zelda 2 supposed to be?
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I think, like, there are just a lot of problems arise, I think, with reconciling those games and the more modern continuity presented by Ocarina of Time. Because there's, like, I don't know, there's just a lot of details about that are difficult to make very good sense of, because it almost seems like both of them should precede the other, but also can't. Because with Zelda 2, you have all of these locations named after the sages from Ocarina, which would imply that those characters were alive before that game happened, so that those places could be named after them. But then, as you mentioned, that is supposed to be the first Zelda, which means the Zelda of Ocarina would naturally have to come after her, which it's kind of a paradox. Like, both of them have elements that make it seem like they should be before the other, but also elements that make that impossible.
Yeah, kind of like what you ended up mentioning with the sages. I've been doing a lot of research, if you haven't noticed. But I ended up possibly thinking maybe the time where she ended up going to sleep was actually before Ocarina of Time to maybe possibly make it work. But kind of like what you ended up saying, the sages ended up being named on the lands. So there's like this whole problem with Zelda being the first and also the sages being named. But according to, I believe it's actually, yes, it was Greekly Collective who ended up possibly saying that they have misplaced Zelda 1 and Zelda 2 to where it should actually be in the adult era timeline because of the whole flooding from Wind Waker and creating of the new world and things like that. So Zelda 1 was actually not the first Zelda of the whole timeline, but actually Princess Zelda 1 was the new Zelda for the new world.
That's actually a very interesting idea that I like. And I do think that of all of the timelines, that one has the most interpretation left open for it. That there is a fair amount we don't know about New Hyrule. And there's also a lot we don't know about what happened in Old Hyrule after Link and Tetra left on their journey. Because there are several hundred years at the end of that timeline where we don't really have any idea what's happening in Hyrule. If it's just kind of the same as the Wind Waker, or in New Hyrule, that there's a pretty big gap in time where a lot of stuff is explained to us in exposition, but we don't really have a very good idea of what happened there.
Yeah, exactly. There's just a lot of questions that Nintendo needs to answer. Quite a bit of it, yeah, can definitely like fit together, but the puzzle doesn't quite fit together perfectly to make it, oh, this is absolutely positively, yes, this is the timeline, exclamation point.
And I honestly think that that is a virtue of it in a way, that it does not, it doesn't work perfectly, which leaves open still a lot of speculation. And, you know, it's possible to be like, you know, a lot of this makes good enough sense, but I think there is some room to improve here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And speaking of that as well, dealing with the whole timeline, what did you feel about Nintendo's explanation of where Breath of the Wild goes? I'm not sure if you ended up hearing about that.
If I recall correctly, it was basically a non-explanation.
Basically, it was more of like, it goes on all timelines! Yay! And everybody's like, what?
You know, it's obviously not a satisfying answer, but I'm also not sure that any other answer would really make sense with the context of the game, because Breath of the Wild features a lot of elements and references that are taken from every timeline and every game of the series. And there's a lot of interesting elements. I think one of the main things people focus in on a lot is the presence of rock salt around Hyrule and a lot of different places that are not like particularly close to the ocean. And when you pick those up, the item description references the fact that they were deposited by a really large sea of some sort, which, you know, a lot of people took to be like, oh, okay, that's interesting. So maybe this is like after Hyrule in the Wind Waker kind of unflooded at some indeterminate point after it. So maybe that's in the adult timeline. But then it also has the Lynels, which a lot of people noted only ever appear in the Downfall timeline, which would seem to imply it goes there. But then there are also vague references, and obviously maybe here not quite as strong as elsewhere, but to the child timeline in that there are, on the beach, I believe, there's an object that looks awfully like a mirror of Twilight. And so, I don't know. I feel like if they were to place it in any one timeline, people would be more mad than they are now because it wouldn't make sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And also on top of that, kind of like what you ended up describing with, like, each element of each timeline is just presented in this game, the lands kind of present quite a bit of the quote-unquote defeated timeline. I'm actually starting to call it the hero disappeared timeline. But,
our canon.
Yeah, it'll be our little secret, I guess. Well, everybody else is going to know now.
It's our secret for a week or two until this episode comes out.
Oh, pretty much. Yeah, the lands present quite a bit of the hero disappeared timeline. And I actually ended up doing some further research of possibly what is everybody's opinions about it dealing with where Breath of the Wild might be. And I came across one that I thought was quite interesting. I'm still kind of on the fence if I agree with it or not. And it's actually bringing in Hyrule Warriors into the timeline.
Yeah.
Where Hyrule Warriors is actually the game that ended up connecting all three timelines to where Breath of the Wild would be able to connect, or not connect, but be able to have all those elements. And it was actually Game Theory that ended up presenting it, that Hyrule Warriors had the portals that ended up bringing all the different worlds into one land. And it ended up, well, bringing in some Twilight, bringing in the ocean, and bringing in different lands from the old timeline. Well, I was going to say old timeline, but the hero disappeared timeline. Mm-hmm. And that's how it actually pretty much connected Breath of the Wild to these timelines. What do you think about that?
I know a lot of people from a lot of different communities have a lot of animosity towards Game Theory. It's understandable sometimes. But I actually do like this theory quite a bit. I think, I don't know, I feel like it just makes a lot of very good sense, even if every detail doesn't line up perfectly well. I think it does make a fair amount of sense. And it seems very, very convenient that Nintendo both has this game that includes elements from all three timelines in a kind of mishmash way, and then also this game that depicts the worlds coming together in that kind of way to form a world that, like, a couple hundred years down the line, I think it would not be unreasonable to see something like Breath of the Wild. And honestly, if Triforce Heroes is canon, so can Hyrule Warriors can be as well.
Oh, I actually agree with you. Like, I've been kind of, the biggest reason why I've been kind of on the fence a little bit, but at the same time I kind of agree with it. Mainly to deal with, well, kind of like what I said, I ended up stating, was portals. There was portals that ended up opening these worlds. And as always, when portals open, they can also close. So when they close, they end up entrapping those different islands. But I don't know. I've been kind of feeling like maybe it can still work, to where things could have been left behind from those portals. Even though, yeah, they open and close. I don't know. I feel like it might be a possibility where Hyrule Warriors could fit into the timeline and connect all three different timelines. So it would make sense why Breath of the Wild has different things from each timeline. And it could also explain the rock salt as well. Like, yeah, it wasn't a vast ocean like it is from Wind Waker, because in the portals, yeah, it was kind of small, not too big, but you can still get some rock salt, possibly from it being dropped from the portals. I don't know. But
oh, for sure. And we don't get a great sense of scale in Hyrule Warriors, I don't think. And so, especially relative to, like, Breath of the Wild's world, say. And then also, you know, I think they don't all have to necessarily come from the same source. We know about the Lanayru Sea in Skyward Sword. And, you know, at that point, it's quite a ways back in the timeline. But, you know, that could also be a potential source. And so I think it could be, you know, there could be a mix there.
Oh, absolutely. And kind of like what you ended up saying, yeah, it's a little far ways away. You can still get some rock salt from Wind Waker.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even if you have the connectiveness of Hyrule Warriors, it's still connecting Wind Waker. So that water is still there and still collecting over time.
Rocks stick around for a long time.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So we might not see it absolutely through Hyrule Warriors, but it's there. Like, it could definitely be there.
With the portals thing, I think that raises an interesting question, actually. Is it really necessarily a merging of the timelines if it's just all of these elements from other timelines being dropped into this one world? Because, you know, we have these different locations from the other timelines and everything, but it's not like they are in full being combined. Like, I have to imagine that we don't see the other timelines really in Hyrule Warriors, so it's not really clear if, like, you know, there's just a giant hole where Death Mountain used to be, wherever they stole that from, or with any of the other locations. But, you know, the world itself is still largely that of Hyrule Warriors, wherever that takes place. And so I wonder if it even really counts as merging the timelines.
You do have a good point there. And also, kind of like going, well, a little off topic, but not too much off topic. It could possibly be that the world of Hyrule Warriors actually started on, like, one of the timelines, and it ended up bringing the other two timelines into the world. Like, it could have started on the adult timeline, and it could bring in some elements of, well, the twilight popping in over from child era, and then some stuff from the Heroes Defeated timeline where Lionel's ended up popping up and just running off of the portals, and they still stuck there.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And the nice thing about that is Hyrule Warriors is, like, aesthetically and location-wise, just the most generic possible Zelda world, that it really can fit pretty much anywhere in the timeline you want to stick it. Like, there were pretty much zero elements about it that make it necessary to place in any one location.
Yeah, absolutely. You can stick it on any timeline, and we don't really see the full world either. We don't know if there is ocean out there that we're just not seeing. The rock salt could be, from the portals, but also it could be, just like I said, from an ocean we're just not seeing, because it's not showing the whole entire world.
That raises a really good point, actually, about theorizing about Zelda geography, in that it's very difficult, and it's a very tricky thing to try to do, because especially when you're dealing with a series that's come out on a variety of systems that have a different levels of power, and across 35 years now, you're going to have to deal with some abstraction, especially when it comes to distance and geography. And so, as somebody who I a little bit ago tried to put together a map that would, like, get all of these different locations from all of the games and all of these like random comics and everything into one cohesive world. And it's hard because a lot of these places are very vague, and you know, it kind of seems like Zelda 2, for the most part, doesn't take place in a location we've really seen in other Zelda games, because it kind of seems like, based on the placement of Death Mountain, it would be to the north of everywhere else. And with games like, I think Breath of the Wild does an okay job at trying to fix it, in that it has that Ocarina Hyrule field within it. But then even with the Lost Woods, that just kind of randomly changes location from game to game. And Lake Hylia as well kind of shifts around at random. So, I don't know, it's difficult. And I think that, you know, it's a bit of a cop-out, but when it comes to where things are placed, you can kind of hand-wave it away a little bit. It's just like, it's a video game, and things are placed where they are because of gameplay.
Well, technically, we could do that with the whole timeline. I won't lie, this has come to my thoughts that Nintendo really doesn't care about the timeline. They're just trying to please everyone.
Oh, no. I think they definitely don't care that much themselves, especially because, well, for one, they kind of made the timeline they had, and it kind of lined up pretty well with a lot of popular fan theories, and I think that was intentional. They also only tried to put games on the timeline for like 5 years and then gave up entirely again. Like, I'm trying to think about what games came out in the period they were actually like making a big deal of revealing timeline placement, and it was the only ones I can remember were, of course, Skyward Sword, which was just first, and then A Link Between Worlds, which in Japan is called Triforce of the Gods 2, so that seems a little bit obvious, and then Triforce Heroes, which is a sequel to that game. So I don't know, I feel like they're in the time when they've had the timeline, they've never really made any tough placements about it, and then when it did get difficult, they were just like, it's somewhere there.
Kind of like what they did with Breath of the Wild. They kind of wanted to explore different, well, techniques and different, well, they wanted to do an explorative kind of game, and they pretty much slapped all the different games into one game and said, here you go.
I don't think it's even necessarily a bad thing, but
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It broaden the horizon for what kind of gameplay that Nintendo could do for Zelda. And I'm pretty excited for Breath of the Wild 2 and seeing if they're going to keep it that way or if they're going to go down a traditional kind of way.
Yeah.
Let's look at my notes. Yeah, that's pretty much like the biggest things that personally I have questions about dealing with the timeline and some different issues that I've personally had over the years. One of the biggest ones was the hero defeated. That was one of the big ones that just kind of just plopped there. But do you have any other kind of opinions or different theories dealing with the timeline?
You know, at the end of the day, Nintendo is clearly kind of trying to distance themselves from it. Like, it's barely even been 10 years, and they're already kind of trying, not necessarily to walk it back, but to be like, fine, we put all of the games that we already made onto this timeline, and we aren't really gonna make it a point to deal with it in the future. I'm not even that upset by it, I don't think, because, I mean, and it's not like they've ever been a company to do this, but I don't really want them to be constrained by, like, oh, well, we have to put this game in the heroes defeated timeline, so we can't include X element or we can't make reference to X character. I think when it comes down to it, Zelda should be considered like a mythology, that this is a bunch of different stories that there may be some continuity between them, but when it comes down to them, when it comes down to it, they're really all pulling from a similar set of elements, but it doesn't all have to make sense.
Yeah, and even so, even if they completely end up saying, nah, we don't want anything to do with the timeline, there's fans that are still going to do it. And I won't lie, I'll be one of them. I'll still try to fit the different games into the timeline, because that's just the way I am. I love theories. I love conspiracy theories. I love different opinions, because it makes it exciting.
If Nintendo decanonized the timeline, that would be the best thing for Zelda theorizing in 20 years. Yeah, it would just open up a whole new world all over again.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm hoping, even though, yes, I definitely want another Breath of the Wild game, I'm hoping that they end up kind of doing what they did with Breath of the Wild and kind of just completely go off rails and do something different. But at the same time, I kind of do want a little bit of tradition, like I want dungeons. But we'll definitely save that for a different opinion theory dealing with things that I don't like about Breath of the Wild.
No matter what we predict, it will definitely be wrong.
Probably. I predict we're having another Hyrule Warriors game.
Oh, God.
Do you not like Hyrule Warriors?
I don't know. I like it. I like it well enough. I've played through half of Age of Calamity. I was a little bit disappointed that that was not actually like a story directly connected to Breath of the Wild in like a meaningful way. But, you know, I put that behind me and just decided I would play it. And I've enjoyed it well enough.
Oh, we'll definitely.
I played a stupid amount of the first one.
Oh, really? We'll yeah. Definitely need to talk about that one for our next one, because I've got a lot of stuff dealing with Age of Calamity. Like, a lot.
We have just an infinite wealth of topics to cover.
Oh,
this is going to be a good series.
Oh, yeah. We'll have enough topics to even still talk about the timeline. I mean, I still have one, but I kind of want to save it for another episode, is dealing with the Master Sword and how the Master Sword is going to kind of be interesting with the timeline. But we'll definitely save that for a different video, because I want to talk just about the Master Sword for yes. One video.
The Master Sword does need its own video.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the debut episode of what did we decide to call the series at the beginning?
Well, we're kind of sticking with Opinion Corner, but it'll probably definitely change.
Well, the debut and perhaps only episode of what is called the Opinion Corner with myself, Realm.
And me.
The Zelda Ann. Thank you all for listening.
All right, Peyton, so what do you think of the Zelda timeline?
Oh, well, it's certainly the timeline. I have no issues with it personally. I think everything lines up pretty well, to be honest. I don't think there's anything really that bad.
So here's me with the Zelda timeline. I had to explain it to Dan one time, like, at lunch, and I had, like, silverware, and so I, like, sort of, like, putting them like all apart. I was like, okay, so this is where it starts and here's where it breaks apart, and I'm like explaining it all that way. But okay, the timeline, and I'm gonna get so much crap for it and I don't really care, the timeline was pulled out of Nintendo's butts to appease fanboys who kept wanting to know what the Zelda timeline was. And so now anytime a Zelda fan is like, where does this fit in the timeline, where does this fit, they add another time split. So if you don't want any more timeline splits, you need to quit complaining about where things are in the timeline, because that's exactly how they got started.
I'm gonna disagree with you. You ready for this?
Okay, go for it.
I think you're probably right nowadays about them just fitting it because of fans, but I think in the beginning they did have a timeline in mind.
Well, yeah, at the beginning that makes sense.
There's Zelda 1, which, you know, is obviously the first game, and then Zelda 2, which was obviously a direct sequel to Zelda 1. Then they added A Link to the Past, which was shown to be a prequel to Zelda 1. Then came Link's Awakening, which was a sequel to A Link to the Past. Then they added Ocarina, which was, I think they said, a prequel to Link to the Past. And things still made sense, because then the next one was Majora's Mask.
Right, which was in another dimension, so it was a direct sequel to Ocarina, yeah.
So everything makes sense here. The next big games were Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages. And, you know, that also made sense, because I think that's after A Link's Awakening in the timeline, because that's all with the A Link to the Past link. So far, everything lines up. We've got Ocarina, followed by A Link to the Past, Link's Awakening, the Oracle games, and then Zelda 1 and Zelda 2. And this is from 1986 all the way to 2001 here. So then they brought up Four Swords. And Four Swords still makes sense, because that was a prequel, because it had Vaadi, and they talked about it. So that one was a prequel to Ocarina. And then they did the Wind Waker. And then that's where everything kind of fell apart from there.
Well, even Wind Waker, like, it makes sense because it's just in the future. Way in the future.
Exactly. So that could have been after the Adventure of Link, you know. All we knew then was that they just flooded Hyrule.
Yeah.
And then after that, we got the Minish Cap and Four Swords Adventures, which were both direct sequels of the original Four Swords. So at the time, we thought it was Four Swords, Four Swords Adventures, and the Minish Cap.
Doesn't Minish Cap become before Four Swords, though?
Yes, you're correct. Sorry, that's my bad. That's my bad.
Because that's where the Four Swords created is a Minish Cap, I think.
Yeah, you're correct. So at this time, everything is still a straight line. We have the Minish Cap, followed by Four Swords, followed by Four Swords Adventures. Then we had Ocarina. Then we had A Link to the Past, Link's Awakening, the Oracle games, and Zelda 1 and Zelda 2. And then Wind Waker.
See, exactly, because it's all a straight line. Straight line timeline? Absolutely, totally makes sense. It's when those splits came about, that had to do with fanboys complaining, and they were like, all right, you want a timeline? Here you go.
And here's the issue. Things still keep making sense. Twilight Princess, direct sequel Ocarina before Wind Waker.
Yes, that makes absolute sense, yes.
Still adds up. Phantom Hourglass, got it, after the Wind Waker. Spirit Tracks, got it, after Phantom Hourglass. Everything here is still a straight line. The next game was Skyward Sword, and that was before Minish Cap. So far, everything's still a straight line, in theory.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, when Skyward Sword came out, they said, ha-ha, JK. And then they made the timeline split, and then nothing made sense.
Yep.
So, really, everything still made sense, and then they just kind of screwed themselves over.
See, I don't think they screwed themselves. I think it was just people going, I want a timeline.
Well, the thing that bugs me is they had, like, it wasn't, like, you know, directly interwoven, but there was, like, a clear timeline because they would reference events in the past and the future. Like, it still made some semblance of sense.
Right, exactly.
I think the big thing with the Wind Waker and Twilight Princess confusion was that both Twilight Princess and the Wind Waker talked about Ganondorf's return. Like, Wind Waker talked about how the hero didn't appear, so they had to flood it, whereas in Twilight Princess, instead, the sages sealed away Ganon after he returned. So it was just, I think, that's where people really started to get confused, was just because the story had Ganondorf twice, dying in different ways, and then somehow returning. So I think that's, like, where people were, like, confused. But overall, minus that literally one detail, the timeline could have been straight linear.
Yep, it could have been. That's why I quit complaining, because then there's going to be another split. Like, yeah, with another game that would be a spoiler if I said there's another timeline split.
I've got no issues with the timeline. I think it's all fine.
I just have a problem with there being, like, three of them, with it, like, splitting into three parts. That's my issue.
Yeah, I think they definitely shot themselves in the foot there. I don't think they needed the three timelines. I felt like they really just wanted the three timelines for some reason.
Yeah, well,
I don't really know.
You know what? I don't think we'll ever know the real answer to it. And that's okay, because ultimately, it's just all about fun.
Hey. Yep. I think that's really what it's just about.
Well, this has been another episode of the ZU Podcast. Thank you, Peyton, for hosting with me.
It was a pleasure. It always is.
And, of course, thank you, Shona and Connor and Zelda Ann and Realm and Eden and Kelly and everybody that's been working on the podcast for this episode. Thank you so much for all of your work on it, because you guys are great. Peyton, where can people find you if they want to see your YouTube stuff and your Twitch stuff and all of that?
You can find me on Zelda Universe TV with my show Creators of Hyrule. There should be a playlist somewhere, but if not, episodes are coming out every 2 weeks. You might already have an episode out by the time this comes out. If not, stay tuned for some of that. You can find me at Emperor_P on Twitch for chaotic Zelda randomized action and some other games that go through the wire. And on Tuesday nights, where I also play a lot of Zelda games. And where can people find you, Amanda?
So you can find me in many places. You can find me every Sunday hosting Zelda news on the Zelda Universe TV YouTube channel. You can also find me on Sunday nights playing Running Blind, where I play games I haven't played before. And if you are listening to this now, I'm currently playing Phoenix Wright and also Zelda 1. I've been kind of going back and forth between the two because I've played Zelda 1 before, but it had been like probably 20 years ago and I never finished it. So I decided I was going to start that one again. And then you can also find me on my own Twitch channel, which is Panda Princessa. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Amanda Van Heil. And I think those are the main things. Oh, and you can also listen to me on the Shine Sparkers podcast where I talk about Metroid. So I'm all over the place. You know what I have not said this whole time? Peyton, go to bed.
Oh my gosh, you really had to end us off with
that. I had to end with Peyton, go to bed.
Eden, take it away, please. Later.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. Thanks for listening to another episode of ZUcast. As you're probably aware, it's time for the credits, which I have heard is your favorite part of the podcast. Amanda Van Heil and Peyton Garrett hosted this LOZ anniversary shindig. Shona Johnson kicked off a year-long retrospective on the history of the franchise. Connor Schultz made his ZUcast debut in his Piece of Heart segment, in which he looked back at the underrated yet trailblazing music of the Famicom/NES titles. The Zelda Ann and Realm returned with a brand new discussion segment, jumping right into the deep end with everyone's favorite or least favorite topic, the Zelda timeline. The executive producer is yours truly, Eden Biskin, while Realm is the assistant producer. Kelly Timmerman is the head editor, while Andy Bundy is the assistant editor. Mary Stowe is the social media liaison, while I am the ZU Forums liaison. Got all that? Good, because there will be a pop quiz when you least expect it. The ZUcast is a production of the ZUBC, a division of Zelda Universe's media team. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music and/or Audible, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite alternative podcatcher. If you can, feel free to leave us a review. We also have an email address to which you can send us some feedback. It's podcast@zeldauniverse.net. You can find and interact with us on the Zelda Universe forums in the ZUcast hub thread in Community Central, and or on our social media pages, at Zelda Universe on Twitter and Facebook, and at Zelda Universe TV on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitch. While the anniversary itself has come and gone, we're still putting together a special ZUcast episode that will look back at 20 years of Zelda Universe. If you would be interested in contributing your memories of the site, please email me at ezlospirit, that's E-Z-L-O-S-P-I-R-I-T, at zeldauniverse.net, or shoot me a private message on the forums. My username is ezlospirit. Finally, I'm excited to announce that the first few episodes of the original ZUcast from 2008 are now available on the Internet Archive. These ones were primarily focused on the ZU forums, so they'll probably only be of interest to a few of you, but I will continue to upload legacy episodes over the course of the year. They started focusing on Zelda in 2009, so keep a lookout for that. You can find them by searching the Internet Archive for ZUcast, and there's also a list in the first post of the ZUcast hub thread on the forums. Alright, I'm going to do you a favor and stop rambling now, because I know you just want to hear us screwing up in the bloopers. Thanks for listening, happy birthday to The Legend of Zelda, and we'll be back again soon. Sayonara! Hey, you. Yeah, you. Thanks for listening to another cast of the ZU episode. Nope.
Okay, Mom, jeez. Get out of my room!
Shona Johnson kicked off a year-long retrospective on the history of the This Is Still Too Loud.
Listen, just let me know where you and Dan found the Fountain of Youth. I could really use it in, like, 10, 20 years.
It's in St. Augustine. Like, seriously, it is in St. Augustine.
Heck, plan a field trip. When'd you two go? For real, you guys are, like, you guys look like both. Like, you're both 20 years younger than you are.
Well, we were there over the summer. And we were there the summer before that.
That makes sense.
I actually went there when I was really little.
There's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. When Amanda was a child, she drank from the Fountain of Youth.
I seriously did, actually. Google Fountain of Youth, St. Augustine, if you're not familiar.
What the heck? So apparently, Amanda, this is the secret, guys. If you want to look as good as Amanda and Dan do in your 30s and 40s, just go to St. Augustine and drink from the Fountain of Youth.
I mean, I always recommend going to St. Augustine because I love being there. That is like one of my favorite beaches.
I don't even know where that is, to be honest.
It's in Florida, and it's, like, just super chill, and they have, like, a gator park, and, again, everything's just super chill.
Interesting. Speaking of chill...
If you would be interested in contributing your memories of the site, please email me at ezlospirit@zeldauniverse.net. Nope.